When designers or architects would come to see me in the office, it was very formal, they would tell their story. Boy, I'm very curious and very interested in their story. So, you know, it's not that. It's just what they were showing wasn't telling that story. And they would say things, you can't see this, but, you know, I'm like, no. The only thing we really have to present to everybody is the visual, because that's the only thing we have that might get somebody to read the story.
Welcome to the Design Pataki podcast, a show that deconstructs the Indian and international design world with leading industry experts. I'm Isha Gupta, the founder of Design Pataki. How to Get Your Book Published Globally with Cindy Allen and Geeta Milchandani. Cindy is one of the most influential women in the editorial design landscape. She's the first female editor-in-chief at Interior Design Magazine, helming the American publication for 20 years now. She has established herself as a force in elevating the design profession's importance and exposure, acting as an ambassador and fervent supporter of architects and designers. With her direction, Interior Design Magazine is constantly evolving to best celebrate designers and their process. Geeta is a founder of her namesake public relations firm, Geeta PR, known for her understanding of the evolving media landscape and digital platform. She has massively executed international programs in the fields of luxury, business, design, fashion, and hospitality. Hi, Cindy. Hi, Geeta. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to have this conversation with both of you.
Thank you, Isha. We're happy to be here. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Hi, Geeta. Hi, Isha. How are you?
Very well, very well. I'm so excited to talk to you about getting published globally. And to start off with, Cindy, can you tell us about your journey as an editor? You know, from the time you started to the present day, you've started in pre-social media days and how the landscape has sort of changed over time. I'm from post-social media, so, you know, let's talk about then and how things are now.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. So I've been editor. September, it'll be 20 years. So
already? Oh, my God. That's amazing.
I know. I can't believe it. Isha, I'm sure you would say the same thing as an editor. Like, time flies in a second. Yes. So, but 20 years ago, oh my goodness, everything was different. Honestly, everything was different. You know, you were using, photography was transparencies. They were 4x5 transparencies. Geeta, do you remember this?
Transparencies and photo shoots took forever. Forever.
Yes. And you know, I would sort of joke around because I was really from a creative standpoint, that was like a big strength of mine. And I was always wanting to push the boundaries on photography because obviously that's what you see in a magazine. And I remember people would just come into the office. You would get 5 transparencies in a photo shoot. So let's say you're photographing an office. So there would be the reception desk. There would be one private office, one big shot of like all the workstations. Maybe you'd get like, there weren't cafeterias then either, right, Geeta? So, you know, it was funny. Like, and I was wanting to tell a better story, a more creative story, more dynamic, more design story. So, but I used to have a whole room that had this huge light box, and the transparencies would come in. They were kind of like treasures in a way, and you'd lay them on the light box. It was, you know, it was an art that was beautiful, but we had to let it go. And I remember one photographer friend of mine, actually my favorite photographer, he's French, Eric Lignel. He used to shoot in a smaller format. So he was the first person that would send me 100 images. And he also had a very creative, like, editorial eye. And the minute I saw him, we got in touch and that was it. We this long relationship of him shooting and also creating these beautiful narratives for me to publish. But I still remember Eric saying to me, he goes, Cindy, I'll always shoot for you in the transparency. And I said, no, you won't, because it'll change and it's okay. So literally everything has changed. Geeta, wouldn't you say the same?
I would say everything has changed and more. And I think the other thing that has changed is the expectation of people. In terms of visuals, people want really beautiful visuals. I mean, Cindy's journey as an editor has also been a journey as an educator. She's really given the industry new benchmarks to reach, new benchmarks to strive for. And she's really taken the industry in a different high-level direction. So if you send Cindy something with beautiful visuals, I say kudos to you, because that's what she's looking for. And I think, Isha, also from your point of view, with your audience, they want the beautiful, inspiring, engaging visual. It's a visual world. At the end of the day, it's about presenting your best style, your best effort, your best energy. So yes, everything has changed and more. And I think for the people that are thinking about what's the next thing, those are the people that are going to keep leading the industry, such as both of you. So
yes, yes. And you know, like, it's sort of, you know, as when designers and architects would come to see me in the office, because that's what you used to do also, it was very formal, they would tell their story. But by the way, I'm very curious and very interested in their story. So, you know, it's not that. It's just what they show, what they were showing mm-hmm. wasn't telling that story. And they would say things, you can't see this, but, you know, I'm like, no. The only thing we really have to present to everybody is the visual, because that's the only thing we have that might get somebody to read the story. Because if it doesn't look good, they're not going to read the story. So anyway, I have to say, interior design is, next year will be 90 years old. And I'm like super proud of that. But you know, we've always been a professional magazine. Way back in the day, it would be considered a quote unquote trade publication. And I wanted to take away that. I wanted it to stay professional, high-end, and to the kind of design junkie out there, which is also happened, but also to become a great design magazine. And that was my goal.
And so, of course, we've gone from 5 images to, say, 20 images per project, right? And how do you feel that we're consuming that conversation, we're consuming those pictures, and the narrative behind it is, do you feel like the narrative's getting lost somewhere? Like you said, they'd come to your office and they tell you the story behind it. So somewhere, do you think that it's just becoming about what you portray out there and not the whole story behind that journey?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways to communicate these days, right? So for instance, you know, a very strong visual is in the magazine. There could be an interview that's, you know, going on our design TV channel. There's definitely one strong visual, like on Instagram. I mean, Instagram is kind of like, is what you're saying to me mm-hmm. is like the wow moment is, you know, it has to be that like wow mm-hmm. thing. I mean, I still want people, we are very, very serious in terms of the story, and we're still one of the few magazines that mm-hmm. fact check the whole story. So we want to get it right. We really do want people to read about the project. You can't force somebody to do that, but we still treat it all very, very seriously. But there's lots of ways to communicate things these days. And there's lots of ways for designers and architects to get their work out. So it may be like a one-shot pony somewhere. We really try to pull in the feature and tell the whole story.
And you know, interior design is primarily an American magazine. So how do you usually pick your global projects? Like you said, that you want to know the whole story, you want to do, you know, check your facts behind it. How does that work?
I mean, I have to say, Isha, we consider ourselves a global magazine. We are in the United States, and we report on, you know, the top designers in our industry. We call them the 100 giants. We have the 100 giants, the 200, the second 100 giants. We have the healthcare giants, the hospitality giants. So we really understand our industry in the United States, but we are a global magazine. And I, because, you know, as an editor, you're always looking for like the next, right? You're always wanting to push out there. And we get so many submissions. I'm drowned in submissions that, you know, sometimes I joke that I have to make sure I put, you know, that I support the American projects, because, you know, there's so many global projects out there that are so exciting, right? So for me, it's a puzzle. It's a really interesting mix, and it's a puzzle. But every issue has quite a few global projects, because I think that the world of design is global, and it's really, really important to kind of balance what's happening where you are and what's happening somewhere else in the world.
But what are the nuances that you look for? Like what is the wow factor that you've seen or a recent project you've seen? And I said, oh my God, I have to feature this. You know, you're drowning in submissions, as you said. How does someone get noticed?
Yeah. As an editor, it's like when you look at something, how do you define magic or spirit or...
You just know.
Right. Right. It's a really hard thing to answer, although you're always looking for originality, right? You're always looking for innovation. I always say we're unapologetically modern magazine. And by the way, that's changed too, because 20 years ago, you know, at least the U.S. was still very, very traditional. But we've always been very clear that we're modern. And now we do a lot of research. And you look at the research and it is completely flipped, right? So traditional is at the bottom and modern is at the top. So we're really in our playground right now. So that's a good thing. But what we look for, how do you define modern now? So modern can go to many different extremes, which I love too, because, you know, something might be, might be extremely out there to the quirky. Something might be strong and more minimal. Like we define modern in many, many different scales, because that's the other thing. Like, and I'm sure you feel the same way, like the spoon to the city, something really, really, really petite and beautiful and small and delicate, and then something big and strong. And, you know, because our magazine is very wide ranging in terms of every issue, like we cover a lot of work. So we, you know, we'll cover a great hotel and then a great bar and then a great office and even a healthcare project and then a residential. Since the range is wide, I'm always looking as I'm putting together the issue that the patterning is different, so that you go from one, like, a very strong project to something that's beautiful and quiet and dances, and then go to something else that's strong. Like, I'm looking for like a really interesting pattern to keep the energy going in the issue.
Talking from a perspective of product designer, interior designer. So for example, you have a product designer in Mexico, and he wants to really keep his cultural roots and he wants to sort of be authentic to where he comes from. But how does he appeal to a global audience? So, you know, how does one, because we talk about modern design in one sense, but the other hand, we also talk about being true to where you come from. So how would you say one should find their voice or, you know, stay true to their roots in that sense, but still sort of get known on a larger platform?
Yeah. First of all, I'm really glad you asked that question, because I think that is key. So I think the key is that he has to celebrate his roots. I'm looking, when we talk about innovation, we're talking about different languages of design. And I am absolutely looking for that designer to show us his roots. You know, a lot, you know, as you're talking about product design, right? You know, right now we are publishing an issue that's called United by Design. And I'm going to do a count in market, which is where we showcase product. We are covering 11 countries in that one section, and you're just reminding me of this designer who weaves in Ghana, that is now weaving modern lights in the same traditional way. And to me, that is like, those are the things where I go, you know, and over time, I think process has become more important, because that actually can visually tell the narrative of how something came to be. And I do believe designers are more and more interested in the spirit of a product and telling that kind of artisan story.
You know, and you know, y'all have this strong Made in America movement. We have a Made in India movement. And I think during the last year that we've been through, everyone sort of had their own parts. Do you feel like you've had to balance that or keep that in mind? And even moving forward, do you feel like you have to sort of tiptoe around those ideologies that you need to focus more on Made in America or, you know, any particular?
Yeah. I think that American made product has gotten really, really interesting. And there's so many young people making things that it's become a very, very interesting topic. I do hear from designers right now that are saying, you know, they want things, they want to be able to specify things that are more local, right? I'm sure you're hearing the same thing too. Mm-hmm. So in a, we're, it's a win-win, right? So I will still feature something that is really far reaching. And then the next page will be something from that's American made. To me, that's the holy grail. That's the win-win for me. Like I love showing where something's made. It kind of doesn't matter where it is made. It just matters that it has integrity and heart, amazing craftsmanship. And again, I think we're fortunate as interior design is fortunate because we are about reporting great design like everywhere. So it is actually our responsibility to show it everywhere. And it's the stuff that turns me on the most. Like I just love that. So, and I'm actually very, very proud of the product coming out of America right now. There's this amazing, I was at this, there's a Vermont lighting company, Hubbardton Forge. And I went to their forge to watch them making things. And it's just so exciting to see things being made. There's nothing better than going on a factory tour. there's so many, Rejuvenation is amazing. There's so many amazing companies that are making things. Oh, I would love to go on a tour with you in India. And I'm sure I would I'm sure I just want to take, I would have to take a big crate home.
And a gazillion pictures, because I feel like the colors here are just so vivid. But I can imagine that. In fact, I was at Saloni and they had this brand called Ritzwell, and they have the most gorgeous factory on an island in Japan. And the idea of, you know, the video of the factory, like you said, turned you on. This turned me on. And I told the PR company, I was like, why haven't you even organized a trip to their factory? Forget bringing them and doing a booth and doing all of that.
I do the same thing because designers eat that up. They love it so much. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And seeing something made makes, it changes everything when you see something made. There's a very good friend of mine, by the way, Stephanie Odegaard, and she was a pioneer in bringing the carpet industry to the States as a woman. She lived in India, and she's actually she goes back and forth between the United States and India, and she's doing a lot of custom furniture. She just finished this beautiful, beautiful reception desk, all handmade with the Indian artisans. So I'm very, very close to what's happening in India. I think, as you know, my mother, who just recently passed, she lived in India for 30 years helping the poor. So, and specifically women, by the way. So I'm very, very close to celebrating the Indian culture.
I'm not surprised, actually, that you're talking about her exporting rugs. So weirdly, India is actually 40% of all the rugs globally is made in India. That's how large the number is. I feel like a lot of countries are also changing their perception as just being manufacturers. And I don't know if you've seen that. So now we're also starting to see great design come from countries which were, you know, initially just looked at as, you know, hands and feet to make sort of products. So that's really interesting. But what I want to ask you is, how do you find new projects? Like, what other than Instagram, how do you usually scope out something new? Has something, you know, unusually popped up and you've been like, oh my God. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's that understandable, the kind of and so on effect. So I think as editors, we're always making a connection, which helps make the next connection and makes the next connection. We have different kinds of support all around the world. So we may get projects from photographers. We may get projects from writers. We may get projects from architects and designers. We may get projects from manufacturers. We may get projects from craftsmen. So it's all these different networks, very like complex networks that keep reaching further and further. And I always say, like, you have to, like, as an editor, you're very, like, controlling nature, right? You want to control what you're doing. But that's one side of you. The other side has to be very open. I've always said my door is always open for new talent, right? So it's sort of like a double-sided, you know, editor.
It's a funny balance that you have to constantly think about, right?
Exactly. And, you know, one thing that's been very, very successful for us, Isha, is we started, it's been way over a decade, and I can't remember how many years, but started something called Best of Year, which is a global competition at the end of the year for the best projects and the best product. And what would happen, we'd let people know that they were like finalists. They didn't know if they won, but they knew that they were for winning. Literally every year, we get over a dozen countries coming to see if they've won. And it's created another kind of community. And it is true that a lot of young people try to get their work out there by you know, submitting to awards programs. But, you know, when they come to the event and they see our community, then they're part of the family, you know, and which is so beautiful. And then they tell their friend and their friend, there's the and so on again. So that's why I'm drowning in work, because we try to stay very, very open and celebrate design in all of its different facets and languages.
That's incredible. And any such stories, Cindy, where you feel like, oh my God, this just popped out of nowhere. Like you project.
All the time.
I
thought this was kind of very, very cool. This gal, the company name is Roar. She's out of Dubai. And her name is Pallavi Dean.
Pallavi Dean. Yeah, of course.
She's amazing. She popped up on our, you know, and I was like, who is this girl? Like, and you know, and it happens over again. Like, and sometimes it's always led by a project. It's led by something that you mm-hmm. see. But I just thought it was interesting that she's like in Dubai, and a gal in Dubai that is like really, you know, making strides, and she's wonderful. She's already, I think I read something recently. She's already done like, I don't know, designed like 80 some odd projects. I'm like, oh my God. X Plus Living, another girl who's doing all this amazing, these amazing bookstores in China. She is a powerhouse mm-hmm. and it's so original, you know, and I have to say that's the thing, right? Like I know it happens on your desk too, or now it happens on the screen. You'll see a good project, you'll see a really good project, but then you see something that stops you in your tracks. And then you're like, who that? What are they doing? I need to know them, right? And so on. It happens with product too, by the way. But projects, like, oh my God, right?
100%, 100%, I feel you. And Geeta, what about you? How do you make us notice all these projects?
I think one of the things that we, as PR people representing different brands and different designers, we really have to work with a client to make sure that what we present to you is really appealing and interesting and has a story. It's not just one more boring project. And I think one of the things that I always try to do is we try to work with brands that have more specialized stories. We don't do mass mailings to editors. I even ask permission from an editor before we send something, because the way I look at it, your time is precious. And if you give us 15 minutes of your time to look at something, we're happy, because you always give us great feedback. But that's after a few decades of working in this industry and getting to know you and traveling with you and understanding the media format better. So I always say, it's the best thing in the world is to have the opportunity to work with experts. Because when you work with an expert and you're presenting something to an expert, you're 80% there. Because we also help our clients edit down and curate. Oh, let's not send that to Cindy, because I think she did something like that last month. Let's send her this. Or let's do this. And the other thing I think is also important is to get to know people on your teams. Because Isha, you have a great team. Cindy has a stellar team. So Cindy may not have time to see it, but if somebody else sees it and likes it, more than likely it will get to Cindy. So I think put egos aside, look at the project, see what the real story is. Is the story appealing? If it's not even appealing to the client, it won't be appealing to anybody. So we can only frame the story, tell the message, but at the end of the day, you both have to be impressed. That's, I think, that's our wow factor. That's the magic sort of formula.
Like everything Gita says is so true. And, you know, how do you get the best out of your client? Like, how do you get the best story, best project? How does Gita tell her client that this one may not be the right one, but this one could be? I think there has to be a lot of honesty, to tell you the truth. Like, there has to be a lot of honesty just in terms of, like, know thy work, know where you want to get published, and know that publication, because it's really important. Actually, like, one of the things that turns me off more than anything is when I give my time, and let's face it, when you come into the office to see me, it takes time. That if something is so off base, like, we would never publish it in a million years, because it really, I have to say, frankly, like, if something's really poorly photographed, maybe too traditional, and it doesn't look like interior, like, we do have a brand that is, like, recognizable. And when somebody really doesn't know, and I have to kind of sit through it, and usually I tell them I try to tell them, like, this isn't something that would be good for us. But even spending my time on that, like, pisses me off. Now, if they had something good that wasn't photographed well, but I saw a germ of an idea, that's something else. Sometimes people come in, it's rare. I have to say it's rare. But when they do, and I could see they don't really even know who they're talking to, then they'll know. That's it.
It's over.
It's rare, but it's rare enough for me to remember. Yeah.
We cannot put one over you. Sorry. We always tell the client, it has to be really accurate and ready. And the research that you guys do when you're doing a story, it's unbelievable. Before the fact checking. So,
well, that was actually going to be my next question, is what not to do? What throws one off completely? And I think you kind of answered one of those, which was, but other than that, do you feel like plagiarism has ever been an issue? Have you ever pointed something like that? Anything else? Any of the other nuances that you've ever faced, which you're like, we cannot feature this?
Well, I mean, you know, you could say things are subjective. So to a certain, you know, I'm always looking for opportunity. So if somebody young is coming to the office and needs advice and needs to, like, kind of get a better perspective, but I know they love the magazine, I'll give them time. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. When they really, like, their goal in life is to get published in interior design, I will absolutely give them time. I mean, you know what? I'm always surprised by, like, the smart young firms that actually really look at the magazine, really read it. They see what photographers we use and they hire them. And I think that's really, really smart. Not saying that you have to do it that way, but certainly when I hear from a photographer who says, oh my God, there's, like, a great project of somebody new, you're going to love it, Cindy. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to do the positive side, which is the reverse of somebody who's really, really on the ball, who's like, I'm going to start a relationship with interior design because that's where I want to be. To me, really understanding where you fit in terms of getting published in certain, you know, in certain different publications, and really knowing them. So the opposite is the thing that pisses me off, when you don't, and it just looks like you just want to get published anywhere. Like, we are all different. We all have a different reason to be in the industry. And I want someone who really understands that we are, like, at the heart of our community and you want to be with us.
No, completely. And I feel it's all about building a community. And I know you've done that with interior design. So with your events, with your awards, and how important do you think for someone who's a designer to be part of that world? Like you said, you know, you have your awards where you'll invite countries to come and take part, come and visit you all, and sort of be a part of the family in a certain sense.
Yeah. You know, I'm really proud of a lot of, look, that's, to me, that's the DNA. That's the thing that I really, really wanted to create. It all happened, you know, when I first became editor, my first issue was our New York issue. And then 9/11 happened, like it was disaster. And I really had to think about how I wanted to lead. And for me, it was about nurturing the community and taking care of the community and moving us forward. So that is kind of like, to me, it's all about service. And that was at the heart of everything I did. So in any case, I love when a designer gets published for the first time with us and then is part of, you know, is part of who we are. And then I'll do an event and invite that person for the first time. And all of a sudden, people that they've looked up to, they're now like becoming friends with them. And then they go off and do their thing. And then they, you know, and then it becomes bigger and bigger. I'm always surprised by folks that have said, oh yeah, you connected us, you know, oh, I went to that event and now we're best friends. And I'm like, don't forget who connected you, you know?
But, absolutely.
Yeah, but I think you also, as designers and small firms, big firms, you need to talk to one another because you also need to see different perspectives. That's how you grow as a designer, right? Even the small jealousies you have of somebody getting published and you wish you did, or you love that project. It's like admiration and jealousy, like those kind of things, like move things forward. But I think creating community, it's all about creating community. I just did, it's funny. A couple days ago was International Women's Day. Yeah. So I did a live webinar. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to like open it up. So there was a young architect who's definitely an advocate for diversity. There was this amazing artist who had been in the fashion industry and does work in our industry. There was a woman who's a product designer, but she also is an amazing speaker to big corporate clients about like creating your own creative business. I mean, it was a really amazing mix of people. And in the middle of it, they're all like loving each other, which I know is going to happen. You know, it's all about editing at the end of the day, right? It's all about editing. Now they're going to be besties, right? At the end, I'm like, I know you're all going to be best friends now. Just remember.
it started with you.
Who played matchmaker? Yeah, let's call Cindy the matchmaker for now. Right. Yeah.
Industry matchmaker.
And you know what? One gal even, and like a leader, she wrote me later and she said, you know, I was always intimidated by this other person that you had on the panel. And now we're going to be friends. And she says, I'm so touched by that. So I was like, hallelujah. So anyway, those are the things that really I just love so much.
The three of us over here, and we love talking about women in design. So how important, of course, I know how important it is to you, but how do you shine a spotlight on women in design? Like you spoke about Pallavi Dean and, you know,
yes.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, first of all, I'm the first woman editor in the 90 years of interior design. So that was pretty cool. Although like, I didn't think of it that way. You know, I don't know. I just thought, oh, we're on to, you know, the new thing. But look, I love great design. And of course, I love women. I love women. We just did a book on women in design. We just published it in the fall. So we definitely walk the walk or walk the talk or whatever you say, however you say that. But it's never, for me, it's never really been like so much of a gender issue, but more of like a gender kind of determination. Like we want to do things and we did do them. And I think that just in terms of women, when women do something, it tends to be more holistic. Like when you're talking about even a woman architect, like I have so many women architect friends, like the whole project tends to be more holistic. Which I love. So, but and especially when, you know, maybe in architecture, women have always had a much harder time. very good friends with Gisu and Moshe Hariri. And Hariri, they come from Iran, and they're in the States, and they do a lot of interiors and they do buildings, but I know that it's been hard for them, and they are at the top. Do you know what I mean? Like, they should be able to do whatever they want to do. And it hasn't been easy as in terms of being a woman, but they are, you know, but I will shine their light anytime I can, because they are amazing, you know, and so many other women in the field, Lauren Rote, Deborah Lehman Smith, Deborah Burke, like there's so many amazing women. It's easy to, you know, it's not like we're doing anybody a favor. Do you know what I mean? Right. It's like, mm-hmm. they're as good as gold. So
they're really good. So from our point of view about women in design, Isha, you asked, I think it goes back to what Cindy said about talent and about their, how they present themselves, the kind of work they're doing, and then the fact that they're great women. And then many of these women are also helping other young women get to that next level. And right. when there's that happening, again, it's about really that great energy and that great momentum. And then it becomes, like you said, a really great community of talented and skilled women helping each other. And when that happens, then I think it kind of takes its own force.
That's magic.
So, it's magic.
Yeah, Gita, thank you for saying that, because I do think also that something most women are very, very passionate about is mentoring other women. And that helps move an industry forward. So I think that's an important point. Thanks, Gita.
And, you know, just quickly touching back to, you know, India. So essentially in design schools over here, 80% of the students are actually women, but they actually stop practicing or they stop being designers because, you know, they get married or they would sort of, you know, have children and they're not able to commit to it. And that's something which I believe in very strongly. And we're trying to sort of change that narrative as well in the, you know, the thought process that you could still move on, but not give up design. You can do it in any form or format that you like. So I think that's something where, you know, as a women-led team, trying to drive as well back home. And like you said, I think talent is the most important. And I think that's the underlying tone and everything. So Cindy, any last words on, you know, how you should get published globally and how important it is in today's day and age?
Look, we want to see work. Honestly, people sometimes edit themselves to send to an editor. And I say, I don't care if I look at 100 images because I'm trying to create a story. So send me the visuals. And I always say too that, like, you can't cover up a project that isn't good enough either. So a great project rises, and then if it's great, we'll figure out how to get it published. And so you don't really know, like, show us the best work, whatever it is. My job is to figure out where it fits. And it's also my job to tell you when it doesn't and why. And I will. We try to be very honest. We always follow up. I have an amazing team. Helene will follow up and let you know it's not getting published and why. And if you start a dialogue, that's good too. We want to get you in there. We want to hear new voices. We want to show the work. It's all opportunity.
That's incredible.
Great design rises.
I think that can be the mantra for today's conversation, for today's podcast. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Gita and Cindy. This has been
Thank you both of you so much.
Thank you.
Fantastic. And, you know, for taking time out to do this, it's been brilliant. Thank you for tuning in. This brings us to the end of another episode of the Design Pataki podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. We'll see you in our next episode. Until then, head over to www.designpataki.com for stories on Indian and international design, art and architecture. Take care and see you soon.